Yeah, I have prepared some comments and some questions. That's okay. The task I thought I was given. And what I'm very pleased about with this context is the presentation of the whole conference on health consequences, because the data has been short and there is still a shortage of exact data on the health complications. But the health complications of FGM is the major reason why we are involved in working against the practice. But also I have felt throughout the history of it, as I said, I worked on this on 18 years, and there has been also controversies in the understanding of the health complications. There has been many researchers who want to emphasize that it's not as risky or not as harmful as expected, and sort of playing down the health risks, and others who are maybe exaggerating the health risks, so using the health risks from the more severe types to argue. And I think both those polarized reaction has a very negative effect in actually using this data preventively. If it's exaggerated, nobody believes it. If it's underplayed, nobody believed it. Anyway, and the reason why we need data on the health complications, I think we need it for at least three uses. One, I think, is important for the policy, to inform policies against FGM. And I think many feel that we have enough data, we know that there are health risks, we have at least enough to inform policies and to strengthen or to support the fact that there are policies against this practice. But we also need this data to work preventively in the communities. And then I come back to one question was raised here, that how relevant are the data from one country in another country? Because I know at least from many health issues, the country, to make policies in their own country, they want data from their own country. So for example, when WHO had a study in 6 countries about birth complications, when I visited other countries that were not a part of this study, they said, but this is not our country, these data are not relevant for us. So how, I wanted to sort of ask, how is it possible and is it necessary to invest money in doing similar studies for each single country where FGM is practiced. And I think it's also very important when it comes to using these messages or using information about health risk for preventing measures. When you have frequent complications that people recognize, it's more easy to convince people. But when you have more rare complications, people don't recognize it in their immediate personal experience. And I think it's also a challenge that the systematic review from Barak found that there is no link between HIV and FGM, and there is no link between STI and FGM. And at least HIV has been one of the most effective messages in some countries. This is the reason why people don't want to practice FGM, is the risk of HIV, which is sort of one of the few areas we don't have evidence on. And another area which is used a lot, which is not mentioned here, is fistula, where we also claim that there is a risk, but there is still no evidence on an association between FGM and fistula. Although it's used, even fistula treatment hospitals are defined as FGM treatment hospitals. Anyway, and the third area where we really need this health complication data is to ensure health care. And I think that is really the area we need to focus more on. And when we see also at the study, we have now enough studies on health complications that some systematic reviews are possible. When it comes to healthcare, I know somebody tried a few years back to make a systematic review and they found no data to use. I think there is a couple of studies now. But we have made guidelines for healthcare, for example, for defibrillation during pregnancy, even before any data has been published on it. So we really need this data for healthcare also. And I had prepared questions. I think one interesting issue is was raised by several of you, is the issue of the lack of data in the system. So earlier this year, ICD-10 had added 2 subcategories of FGM. These were categories Z97 for acquired absence of genital organs and O347 for maternal care for abnormality in vulva and perineum. So I don't know if this type of, it's only 2 codes, very simple codes, and we hope in the ICD-11 there'll be more detailed codes. But do any of you have position on whether such having these codes and getting it into medical records is a way to collect this data more easily without specific studies.
What we have seen is that registering is not done very systematically, is not really done very well, unless they knew that we were going to evaluate and they received a short training, then we saw that the registration was getting better. So there is an issue there that you really need health professionals to be aware of the codes and also that they keep track of it in the records. So,
in fact, for example, for WHO, it is not separate because, for example, we work with the Ministry of Health, you know, and their own national systems to collect the data. Look, it was mentioned, you know, the DHS, you know, and so on. But the issue at national level, it is who collects the data, you know. And we have not what we call integrated health systems, you know, in many African countries, for example. And you have, for example, NGO collect their own data. Sometimes it is aggregate data, not disaggregate data. Donc, if it is aggregate data, you cannot, you know, compare the data between, you know, national systems and this NGO systems, for example. And I think the issue, it is about the health information systems, you know, that it is the big issue, you know. Donc it's a lot of work. I have worked on that in Rwanda, for example. We have assessed, in fact, the quality, you know, of each institution, you know, including education sector, because education and health are linked together again. For example, you need to consider, including for a practitioner, when the people go out for the university, how they will be trained, you know, in the hospital, you know, how they will report, you know, if they have training about that. Donc it is very broad, you know, issue, I will say, and it is very important to keep in the mind, you know, this aspect of how to improve, to strengthen the integrated health system information, you know, for the country as improvement for quality of data.
And I have another question because of the suggestion to compare data with the people in diaspora and people in the home country and people with good health system and countries with low healthcare system. And I think one challenge which will be raised earlier today, the issue of medicalization, that FGM is also increasingly being done by medical professionals. And for example, you have countries where 70% of girls undergo FGM in the hands of medical doctors. And it would be also very interesting to have data on the health complications compared to the performer. I think those data are not that there, but that would be very interesting. But also the issue of healthcare, seeking of healthcare services. So do women with higher education also are more aware of the health complications from FGM and then more easily search for help for their complications? I don't know if any of you know any data on this or any planned studies.
Few comments on that. Back to your previous question, it certainly is problematic when there's a lack of comparative methodologies in the collection, both of the exposure and the outcome. This complicates synthesis of data, and it's a limitation when you're meta-synthesizing data. As far as complications relative to performer, we intended to compare based on performer, and there were no data in which this was addressed. We were unable to do that. And for all practical purposes, I'm not sure there's all this much to learn. I mean, are we willing to start saying it's okay to perform FGM if there's a little less complications when it's a medical personnel executing the FGM? So we have to think about why are we asking the question, I think. And yes, obviously, healthcare situations do make a difference when it comes also to complications. We did look to some extent at the settings in which the FGM was performed in our systematic reviews, finding that the most valid data were usually from Western city communities where the women originated from a community with FGM, but were actually receiving healthcare in a Western community. So even in optimal health situations, they experienced complications.
Je m'appelle Toby Levin van Gleichen. Je voudrais tout simplement signaler que dans l'indépendant aujourd'hui, en Angleterre, on a donné des résultats des enquêtes dans les hôpitaux. Il y avait 15 femmes qui se présentent ou filles qui se présentent avec des dommages de FGM chaque jour. C'était le chiffre qui a été donné. Et alors, il y avait plus de 400 par mois.
I think this is very, very risky. And if we start to embark on comparing things being performed by healthcare providers or none, this will be very risky. I just was on the phone before this session with a commentator from the newspaper about the case of death which happened in Egypt. As a result of performing female genital mutilation by a doctor, you know, so complications do happen even with doctors, no matter how much is the experience of the performers, and even so, even if the immediate complications are going to be less, but certainly the long-term complications and psychological impact and the effect on sexuality and the reproductive performance will not decrease because the procedure is being performed by a doctor or by a traditional healer. Thank you.
I'm interested, or actually I'm very disappointed in the WHO six-country studies. You know, the meta-analysis may depend mainly on one study, and I think in your meta-analysis with respect to the obstetric complications, that WHO study has a high weight. The problem with that study that it did not control for defibrillation in labor. You know, if you do the defibrillation in labor at the proper time, all these complications do not exist. And there was one study I published in the Green Journal last year. We looked at about 600 patients where we compared women properly defibrillated in labor without and other group of women who did not have FGM. There were no differences. So the message here is proper timing of the delivery in hospitals. Has nothing to do with the obstetric complications that you all described in the WHO study. Thank you.
Je m'appelle Christiane Hureau, je suis pédiatre. J'ai créé l'association Migration Santé. Et depuis donc de très très nombreuses années, on a travaillé sur les mutilations sexuelles. Et je suis très étonnée de voir qu'on ne parle maintenant plus que de mutilations sexuelles en général. On ne fait pas, d'ailleurs, ça a été un petit peu relevé une ou deux fois, dans la recherche des conséquences, on ne fait pas du tout la distinction entre une simple circoncision sunnite, une excision, une infibulation. Ça n'a quand même rien à voir au niveau des conséquences. Alors, une ou deux personnes l'ont dit, je sais que c'est beaucoup plus de travail, c'est beaucoup plus compliqué s'il faut vraiment serrer le type de mutilation qui a été faite, mais on ne peut pas parler sérieusement de tant de consultations, un tel pourcentage de consultations globalement, comme ça, quelles que soient les mutilations qui ont été faites. Ça me paraît vraiment très très important de garder cette approche typologique, comme vous avez dit, parce que c'est, et puis la fréquence n'est pas du tout la même. Et alors je voudrais aussi savoir par rapport aux professionnels qui pratiquent ces mutilations, est-ce qu'on a un peu une idée de ce qui se passe? Enfin, ils sont prêts à faire n'importe quel type de mutilation, la fibulation, sans problème. On y va. Enfin, j'aurais aimé avoir quelques détails là-dessus. Merci.
Thank you to the audience for your insightful comments. With respect to the differences in consequences relative to the type of FGM that the women undergo, we did, to the extent that it was possible, always compare different types of FGM relative to the various outcomes. And if you're interested in looking at At these results, they are detailed in the technical reports. I shortened my presentation for time today, so I didn't go into that. I only talked about FGM versus no FGM, but we certainly did look at the different types of FGM and whether there were any differences there. Overall, we didn't find a lot of differences relative to the type of FGM that women had undergone. But there were certainly some indications that there were more harm from FGM type 3 relative to, for example, type 1 and also nicking. So that's detailed in the technical report for those who are interested in looking at that.
Thank you.
I want to congratulate the team, very powerful team, who made the presentations, and their presentations are excellent. But two small comments, one on the comment by Elise, and I'll follow the example of Sarur Gamal from Egypt. I am from Kenya, my name is Jaldesa. One of the things that we have been teaching whenever we train people on FGM is that there's nobody who has been trained in performing FGM. And any medical practitioner who does this procedure that has not been trained is no different from the traditional birth attendants or the traditional cutters, and therefore there's no benefit of anybody saying that they are medical workers, because they have never been, there's no medical school anywhere in the world that trains people on how to perform FGM, and therefore no one has the competence to perform it. Number two, on the issue of the WHO study in the 6 countries, I happen to be one of the unfortunate people participating in that study. And our conclusion was based on when data was compared from different parts of the different types of FGM performed in Africa in what is considered as well-privileged facilities, and we control for all other confounding factors, the different types of FGM had certain complications. So irrespective of whether it was done, and the issue is, suppose it was done, the delivery was happening at home and skilled care, the complications would have been much worse than what was reported. So it's not the issue of whether it was delivery was happening in a hospital and that the defibrillation took place or not. We have control for all other confounding factors, and those are the findings. Like, I think 66% of babies, there's an increase of 66% of perinatal resuscitation. There is about 70% increase in hemorrhage, about 30% increase in caesarean sections, and those things are all happening in hospitals, and we have to find out exactly what are the other factors other than the inelastic perineum, which may have caused the problems. So it's not the issue of whether defibrillation was done at the appropriate time or not.